I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. There was a noisy meeting of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission last week, attended by teachers, parents, and students upset about the district's budget crisis and how it's been handled. They were even more upset when the SRC voted to suspend some of the salary and hiring provisions of the Pennsylvania School Code, allowing the district to hire back laid-off teachers without using seniority. The district announced a $304 million budget shortfall about 6 months ago, which has led to months of wrangling between the state, the city, the SRC, and the teachers' union. The city recently made a commitment of $50 million. Harrisburg said the state would kick in $45 million, but only if the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers made $133 million in concessions. While the schools are scheduled to open on time on September 9th, there is still uncertainty about how they will be staffed and what the teachers will decide when their contract expires on August 31st. Well, joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is the Philadelphia School Superintendent, William Height. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Is this any way to run a district?
No, it isn't. For the last 10 and a half months, we've been faced with some pretty extraordinary circumstances. And as you know, we've had to close schools. We've had to lay off large numbers of individuals. We've even had to indicate that we may not be able to open if, in fact, we did not have resources that allowed us to have a functional school opening on September 9th.
Well, I'm thinking about parents, children ready to go back to school. What can you tell them if they have concerns, even fears about what might be going on in their school?
Yeah, I think one thing that's really important is that on September 9th, we will expect 134,000 young people to return to schools. And when they return to schools, they will find very different schools. Now, I don't want anyone to get me wrong. We will be ready for those young people to return. However, our schools will not have the same number of individuals that were there. They will have teachers. They will have access to services like guidance services. Some schools will have assistant principals. All schools will have safety and school police. However, some of the resources that we typically expect in schools will not be there.
Well, as we know, there were almost 4,000 layoffs in June. How many of those people do you think will be hired back?
Well, here recently, the most recent numbers, we will be bringing back about 1,600 individuals. That's given the monies that we've been able to utilize over the summer. That's the $33 million that we talked about several weeks ago, along with the $50 million that we have now received assurances for from the mayor and the president of council.
But will schools have counselors? Will they have assistant principals? Will they have secretaries? Will they have, you know, noontime aides?
Yes, schools will have.
All schools?
All schools will have some of the resources that you just described. So all schools will have noontime aides. All schools will have at least one secretary. All schools will have a principal. Schools that have school police will have school police. All schools will have maintenance and custodial services. And then, based on size, some schools will have guidance counselors. Many of those are larger schools, particularly the high schools. Some of our larger schools will have assistant principals. Many of those are high schools, and many are the larger schools. And then, based on a formula that is broken into three categories. One category is by size, the other category is by level of school, and the other category is whether or not the school is a receiving school. That means it's receiving one of the 10,000 young people who were impacted by a school consolidation and closure. Then, based on those categories, we will add other resources to meet the needs of those students.
We had a show last week with three Philadelphia school teachers, and we heard a lot from teachers, Philadelphia school teachers, calling in by telephone. And I have to say, there was a theme there, which is the need for counselors in schools, whether to deal with college applications, whether to deal with family issues, things that might happen in the school. It was, for them, it was so critical to have a school counselor.
Yeah, it's no question about it, and I share that sentiment. And I think that counseling services are extremely important, especially for our young people, as I do with assistant principals and other individuals who are handling and monitoring students. And the truth of the matter is we can only bring back a portion of those individuals based on what we have at the moment. We feel like those services are adequate to provide us for functional types of schools. We don't think that it is adequate to provide students with the type of education that we want students here in Philadelphia to receive.
Do you think, though, looking back over the last couple of months, and I'm talking about the state with this particular question, that Philadelphia, the mayor, SRC, even yourself, could have played harder hardball with the state? The state was willing to give $45 million, but only if the school district teachers give up something like $133 million in benefits and pay.
Yeah, and I think that there are a couple of very important points there. So we did have a $304 million shortfall. Inside of that shortfall, we asked for $180 million from the state and from the city based on how they allocate resources. $120 was from the state, $60 was from the city. And with the balance of that, $133 being from our labor partners. And what we received was monies this year, but we've also received monies based on now how the monies are coming.
Right.
And I know many people are saying they're coming from the city and the state, but the combination of dollars will equate, given our ability now to collect on delinquent taxes and with a 1% extension of the sales tax, that equals to about $150 million over a period of years. That's more than what the school district has been receiving in terms of monies or revenue from the state and or the city. And it is with the assurance, the 45 is just not based on a reform contract. The $120 million over the next several years is also based on a reform contract. So it's not just a 45. It is actually having access to more of those resources moving forward.
You're quoted as saying that Harrisburg thinks of Philadelphia as a cesspool. I'm looking at something that was in the Philadelphia Inquirer. People believe, and I'm quoting, this was Kristen Graham, people believe the district operates inefficiently, wastes money, and, quote, protects individuals that are not serving children, something that you said. Do you think the Philadelphia School District, do you think this is a cesspool?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, and I was actually stating something that was communicated to me on several occasions by individuals who were not from Philadelphia, and was repeating that as a statement given a set of thoughts. No, under no circumstances do I believe it is one. However, I do think it's really important for individuals to understand how others perceive the district and the city. Quite frankly, I think there are tremendous opportunities for us, and I think there are tremendous educational opportunities for us moving forward. But I do think that we are navigating through a very tough time. Now, the second part of that is that we should be thinking about how we impact the outcomes of students, and those should be some of the driving questions of anything that happens inside of the school district of Philadelphia. What will the end result mean for students?
But if someone were to say to you, the Philadelphia school system is a cesspool, what would you say back to them?
Well, I would, and they used other terms as well, and that I won't repeat on radio.
Just as disparaging.
Just disparaging comments, yes. And this is when I was actually, this was before I actually started in the district. And you know, why would you accept a job there? Why would you do that? And it's because of the tremendous opportunities that I believe we have to demonstrate how urban education actually can meet the needs of the students and prepare them for things after high school, prepare them for careers, prepare them if they choose to move into college, but prepare them for things as a result of their educational experience with the School District of Philadelphia.
Let me ask you about seniority and the idea of, I guess, removing seniority in one of the criteria for hiring teachers back. Why do you want that, and how would that improve what would go on in a classroom?
So this whole conversation about seniority has actually gone in an interesting direction here, and because I think, first and foremost, We're in negotiations with the PFT, as we are with several of their other labor units. In those negotiations, how we talk about conditions around employment is a subject of negotiation. Seniority falls clearly on that. Then there is an issue for us to open schools on September 9th. And in order to open schools on September 9th, what we're attempting to do is to make sure that we're able to match the needs of adults who were with children in June with children when they return in September. And if we can only bring back a portion of certain individuals, i.e. guidance counselors, then the only way to do that is to waive the state code that requires us to bring people back into in a certain fashion by years of experience of seniority. And the waiver of that state code was specifically for that purpose. It was not
a one-time waiver?
Yeah, absolutely. It was not to apply to wholesale types of code waivers to bring everyone back outside of seniority. This is to meet the needs of students on September 9th. And what students and principals have both said is that, yes, we need guidance counselors back. We need assistant principals back. We need noontime aides back. But we need hours back. And students are saying, I want my guidance counselor back. If we only have one, we hope that that's the one who knows us and who was at our school the year before. The only way to do that was to waive the state code. So I don't want to conflate the two issues. The waiver of the state code was specifically for a duration of time while the district is trying to maneuver through these extraordinary set circumstances. And then their seniority as a broader conversation about how do we make decisions and how do we place and staff schools. That's a subject of bargaining, and that has to be done at the table.
And we're almost up in a break here, but it seems that once you begin to chip away at things like seniority, then there are questions about retention, even questions about hiring teachers if they feel as if seniority doesn't give them, you know, some kind of a security.
Yeah, I mean, don't want to conflate two different issues. One is to prepare for opening. The other is how we are able to staff schools. And then there's a third one about job protections. But those are more subjects of bargaining than anything else. What we were looking for was as much flexibility as possible in order to open school with fewer resources than we had when we closed in June.
So, we're almost up on a break here, but when the PFT contract is up on August 31st, so this whole issue of seniority is part of that bargaining
absolutely
that's going on?
Absolutely.
That's William Height, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's the Philadelphia School Superintendent, and I'm sure if you have been reading or listening or watching the news, you know that the district has had serious financial problems. There have been all sorts of disagreements and discussions between the state, the city, the SRC, teachers' unions, and we are talking about what's going to happen in a couple of weeks when the schools open. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. Alzheimer's is not curable, but prescription medications can sometimes help to maintain the quality of life for longer periods. Keystone Clinical Studies of Norristown is conducting a research study to test a new investigational medication for patients with a diagnosis of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. 610-277-8073. 610-277-8073 or KeystoneClinicalStudies.com. Keystone Clinical Studies supports WHYY.
The WHYY Connections Festival is back with a day of free live music featuring They Might Be Giants, Ben Queller, and more. Saturday, September 7th at the Great Plaza at Penn's Landing. The WHYY Connections Festival is free for everyone, and WHYY members and sustainers get exclusive access to the Member Oasis tent all day long. They Might Be Giants and more Saturday, September 7th at the Great Plaza. For a full lineup and to register, visit whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, new sounds from the New Orleans jazz scene, artists like 30-year-old trumpeter Christian Scott. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. After a summer of uncertainty, Philadelphia public school students will go back to school on September 9th. A commitment of $50 million in emergency aid from the city of Philadelphia was crucial to the opening of schools on time. But there are certainly questions about the money from Harrisburg and what the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers will do. And our guest in this hour of Radio Times is William Height, superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. Let me get some callers in. It looks like we have Helen Gim from Chinatown. Helen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. I should say to our listeners, you're the head of Parents United for Public Education. Go ahead, Helen.
Correct. And a parent, mother of three children in
yes.
the district.
Yes.
So thank you, Dr. Height. You know, obviously, as a parent, my primary concern is the difference between opening schools versus educating children. And my own principal was publicly stating on Newsworks that, you know, one guidance counselor and less than a month's worth of school supply money and a minimal number of teachers does not make that school, which is one of the top schools in the city, a quote-unquote, even a functioning school. We've got split grades, no guidance counselors for 60% of the high schools, two-thirds of elementary schools won't have a guidance counselor, one nurse per 1,500 students. I mean, I don't think this is just a question about whether this is an opportunity or a time for reform. I think this is really asking fundamental questions about whether what's happening out there is educating students. And my question is, what are you doing to ensure that children are being educated by demanding really that money came from the state and city? I really admired your move to say schools shouldn't open because they can't open safely, but I don't think that's changed with the $50 million. I think it's, I'm wondering why you decided it was 50 when it's so clearly inadequate. And really what we need to hear about is your plan to demand more from the state,
Helen,
and city to ensure that schools are safe.
Helen,
thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you for the comments, and thank you for your advocacy around more funding as we were going through that process. I think a couple of your points are really important, and one is that the decision to focus on the school opening and without the $50 million, and the problem with that whole process and that whole conversation was that it focused on a part of the money that we needed. Remember, we have a $304 million hole. With the $50 million, now we have been able to return about $83 million of the $304 million hole. We also anticipate that when we are able to get to agreement with our labor partners, there is another $147 million available to the district, given where we will fall or not with labor. And for every cent that we get back from the contributions to benefits or to the concessions, the economic concessions that we're asking from all of our employees, not just from the PFT, those things translate directly into monies and funding for classrooms. Now, on to the point, we made the statement about not being able to open because when we were having that conversation, if you remember, we only had a secretary and a principal in the building. Now we've been able to add individuals who can watch children in the hallways, who can also watch children at lunch with the noontime aides. We were able to return some of the services that are so critical, particularly to high school students, but to your point, to elementary students as well, like guidance counselors. But we have not been able to return those to every single school. And under no scenario would we be able to return every single person to the schools because our cuts were actually more significant than 304, but that's the hole that we have now in order to balance our budget.
And what I hear from Helen, and I think from other people as well, is that that is not good enough. And that there was perhaps more that could be done to put pressure on the state. After all, the state did, in a sense, take over the schools a dozen years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the state and the state has a constitutional responsibility to adequately fund schools. And I want to go back to the point I made earlier. We did make requests to the state, and at no other time, and it may have been other times, but at no other time that I can recall that made such a significant request both to the state and to the city, and the majority of the requests was from the state. The state, and we can debate about how convoluted the process was and all of those things, but the state did, through legislation that was also signed by the governor, give us the ability to have a lot of revenue moving forward. But the ability to do that is going to be based on a couple of things. And in the interim, they also gave us access to $50 million that we now have assurances to, and the $45 million that would be based on a reform contract.
One of the arguments from members of the PFT, the teachers union, is that this is designed to break the union, or if not break the union, chip away at its authorities. What do you say? I mean, that's a feeling, rightly or wrongly, that a lot of teachers have.
Sure, and I completely understand that, and I do believe that the majority of our educators go above and beyond what we ask them to do to educate our students. And I believe we owe them not only tremendous gratitude, but the type of compensation that recognizes the profession. And make no mistake about it, if we were not in these fiscal circumstances, we would be having a very different conversation about how we should be more adequately and appropriately compensating our teachers. The problem is right now, we're navigating through an economic environment that does not allow us to have that conversation. And we don't intend to live here forever, but it's something that we all have to navigate through. It is the reason why we had to close schools. It's the reason why we had to lay off so many individuals. It's the reason why we had to ask for concessions from our blue-collar union a year ago. It's the reason why I and my team are taking a 10% cut. It is the shared sacrifices that we're asking for across all employees who work for the school district of Philadelphia. And as I indicated, it is something that we are attempting to navigate through, understanding that these are extraordinary set of circumstances. I'm a teacher. My daughter is a teacher. And I don't think we pay them enough. And as I indicated earlier, this would be a very different conversation if we were not in the financial circumstance we're in.
But in a year's time, are we going to be having the same kind of conversation? Are you confident that the district can deal with these financial woes?
Yeah, I mean, and there's a reason, Marty, we have this conversation every year. And the reason, quite frankly, is because the district makes requests and we get part of the requests, or we get none of the requests, or we get part of the request that depends on something else. And without completely filling that gap, then we just push the problem. And one of the things that I said, I think here on your show, was that we're going to commit to not spend any more than we have, which is a very different position than we've been in the past. And there's a reason for that. But by the same token, I hope we will not be in the same position. But it all depends on how the funds will flow to the district. And if we have access to the 304 for the first time in I don't know when, we would actually have a balanced budget. But that will take, as I indicated earlier, the shared sacrifices and the additional revenue.
And that's William Hite, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's superintendent of the Philadelphia School District, a job he's had for just about a year. And we're taking calls, talking about some of the financial crises that has been facing the district and some of the decisions that our guests and also the School Reform Commission has made over the last couple of months. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. This is, looks like John from Wilmington, Delaware, joining us on Radio Times. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'd like to follow up with a question that was posed a few minutes ago,
sure,
and I didn't hear a response. I have two daughters at the Powell School. They are twins in the third grade, about to start the third grade. And we just learned that the plan is to split the second and third grade, so to have fewer teachers and to have second and third graders in the same classroom. And I'm just wondering what pedagogical model justifies that, given you're talking about kids that are, you know, perhaps almost 2 years apart chronologically.
And being in the same Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that question. And thank you for all of the emails I'm receiving from the Powell community as well. And I think one thing that's really important is, as we talk about the individuals that are returned, even within the $50 million, we also will be returning some guidance counselors, some assistant principals, a lot of noontime aides, and we have a pool of teachers to address what the caller just asked about, this notion of combination classes, especially at the early grades and at the early years. And so we're really focusing on second and third grade, what's called combination classes. And these classes happen when there are not enough students to make up one full class, and there are fewer students in and then the total number doesn't exceed a class size, and so therefore they put the students together. Hmm. That works in some of the later grades, as the caller indicated. It's not an appropriate educational model, we think, educational approach, we think, in the early grades like second and third. And so we do, as a part of the $50 million, have monies for this notion of combo classes, or I call them combo classes, but they're combination grades like second and third. That's something that we're addressing school by school.
And I would think, and I think I hear from John's question, is that third grader going to get a third grade education if they're in a classroom with second graders?
Right, and that's one of the reasons we think it's really important to have a pool of teachers that will also provide, that we can send to schools that have those unique circumstances.
Let me see what – thanks for the call, John. Let's see what Brian from University City has to say. Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my question. I'm a father of two school-age children and the husband of a laid-off guidance counselor up at Central High School. And so I've been following this very, very closely because we get the double whammy. And I'm privy to firsthand information through my wife about the load that the guidance counselors carry. And Superintendent Hyde, you made mention about adequate staffing for functional schools. And what she tells me is that they're bringing back one counselor to Central High School. The student population at Central High School is 2,400 students with 600 seniors. And I'd love to hear your explanation of how one guidance counselor is adequate to serve that population.
Brian, thanks for the call. Yes, go ahead, William Hyde.
Thank you. So one is not adequate to serve that size population. And what we want, and as I indicated earlier, one of the things that we know is going to continue to be a process through this is the negotiations process and the release of other monies that we hope we will have access to, which will allow us to bring back more individuals to schools. And just as a matter of form, for every 10 people that contribute 10%, we can bring back one teacher, a counselor, or assistant principal. And so part of this is confined inside of a set of a whole bunch of things that must happen. Here's the other part that I think is really important. Based on the size of the school, there are additional resources for other things. And the principal will have at his or her discretion the ability to use those additional resources in a way that they think best meet the needs of their schools. As I indicated earlier, the size of school and a 2,000-student high school would mean that there could be some additional resources mm-hmm. come into that school. So I'm not so sure that given the school that the caller was describing would actually receive one or whether or not the principal has made a decision about using some of the, his or her discretion to move those funds to different places. And so that would have to be something that we would have to look at and see and speak to the principal mm-hmm. about how they're intending to use the resources that are returning to that school.
Because I would assume a lot of those seniors at Central are looking to go to college, and oftentimes counselors are there to help them through that particular process. 600 seniors.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think the point that the caller is making is the absolute right one, that we understand that these are these will be functional schools, but not adequate to serve the students, not like we want to serve students as a school district. And so part of this is an understanding that in order to bring back more individuals, we will need help from our labor partners, specifically the PFT, yes, and we would need access to the additional revenues.
I wonder, and just from a couple of the callers that we had there, that the parents who have a choice, looking at the struggles that the school district has been having, and the fact that even you're saying that it's not adequate, it's not these schools are not staffed the way that you would want them to be, that they would choose something else. They would choose a charter. They would choose a private school. They'd choose a religious school. They'd move out of the city. Are you worried about that?
Oh, I absolutely am worried about that. And I think that one of the and unfortunately, when you're having a conversation about just kind of the fiscal reality, and Monty, if we go back and talk about every conversation that I've had since I've been here, it's been about closing schools. It's been about laying off individuals. It's been about removing programs. It's been about questions of whether or not we can open. Those are not conversations that I, as superintendent, want to have and continue to have moving forward. We need to have conversations about how do we expose more students to learning environments that provide for them the appropriate levels of rigor. How do we get more students access to language and art and music? How do we ensure that every student is reading at grade level by third grade? How do we get every child into a pre-K program? How do we get more AP courses into schools? Those are all of the conversations I would love to have, but unfortunately, over the last 10 and a half months, we've been talking about all of these other things. And so that is my worry, that individuals who will have a choice will choose something else, because then I don't feel like we've had the type of support necessary or the appropriate funding necessary in order to build an academic program that looks very different.
About a minute before a second break, just a question about principals. And it sounds like the principals have a little more authority on choosing who would be staffed in their particular schools. Do you feel like you've got the quality of principals who can make those right decisions for those students and those teachers?
I think that yes, we have in many cases, in many places, the quality. We have at some schools, at 50 of our schools, we have brand new principals. And we are going to continue to develop those individuals around being able to make those types of decisions. And we're moving to a place where we think that it's not a one-size-fits-all model that should be applied across all schools, but it should be in the context of those respective communities, what principals feel like they need. And, oh, by the way, principals are the ones who are being held accountable for the performance and outcomes of their students. And so those things are extremely important for us to give them more latitude, especially when it's not a conversation about returning everyone, but having to return some individuals, then it's really important for principals to be able to make those decisions.
And that's William Height, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's the superintendent of the Philadelphia School District of, the School District of Philadelphia, a job he's had for just about a year. He has been dealing, as he has been describing, with one financial crisis after another. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Studio Incaminati, School for Contemporary Realist Art in Center City, supports WHYY and announces its weekly continuing education classes. Students can develop their artistic skills and learn new ones in small classes taught by instructors who are working professional artists. Drawing and painting classes for all skill levels focus on the portrait and figure, and there are special classes for high school students. Semester begins September 16th. Details at studioincaminati.org.
On the next Fresh Air,
5 guys, 12 pubs, 50 pints.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost join us. Their new comedy, The World's End, is about 5 old high school friends reuniting to finish a pub crawl they began 20 years earlier. It's the third film of the trilogy that includes Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
moments of truth and terror for the people of Egypt and Syria.
If you thought the Middle East was confusing before, try it these days. This is an array of divisions that I have never witnessed in covering 40 years of the Middle East.
Hosni Mubarak set free weapons of mass destruction in Syria. The arduous journey from rumors to facts in the Middle East. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Philadelphia School Superintendent William Height. Earlier this year, the district announced that it was facing a budget deficit of about $304 million. That has led to a chaotic few months, including some layoffs and some wrangling over money from the state, from the city, and some concessions, proposed concessions from the teachers' union. The union contract expires on August 31st. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Greg from University City to join us on Radio Times. Greg, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Height. First of all, I am a parent at Penn Alexander, and I do appreciate what you were able to do for us there. But what my question for you right now is, you said earlier that you and your staff are taking 10% off from your salary as a concession for this, and we're looking to take, they're looking for concessions from the labor force, but what else is happening in the district office? What sacrifices can be made at the district office that can help out with this situation, or what has been made besides the 10% that you and your staff have taken?
Greg, thanks for the call.
Yeah, great, thank you. Thank you for that call, and thank you for allowing me to talk about the district office. And a district office that at one time was about 2,000 individuals. We now have 400 individuals in a district office where we are questioning their ability to do just those things that we take for granted, things like payroll. And the district office over the past several years has taken 5% decrease over the past 2 years. They've also made contributions to their wages, to their benefits. And in addition to that, we have also eliminated another 150 positions, many of which were vacant positions, but they were nonetheless critical functions. And so we have now a district office that is around 400 individuals. It's by percentage, it's one of the smallest, if probably the smallest administration that you would see anywhere in the country, especially serving the number of students that we serve. And so that's what the district has been doing over the past several years, in addition to furloughs, and they've been also furloughed. So they've been contributing to their benefits. We have reduced dramatically the number. It went from 700 last year down to 400. But it, as I indicated before, it's been as high as 2,000. It is all of our non-represented employees have made contributions to health care and been exposed to 5% pay reductions and furloughs.
Is that what you expect from the school district, from the teachers, something along those lines?
Well, it's... That's what they've done over the past several years, and what we expect from the PFT, our teachers, is on par with what we were able to agree to with our blue collar union a year ago, SEIU 32BJ. Those individuals who clean our schools, individual who provide support, they are now contributing on average 10%. To concessions, and they're also paying for their health care.
Let me just read back a quote that you said. This is having to do with charters, and we know the charters have had a mixed record here. You said unmanaged, self-directed charter school growth could force the district into a perpetual deficit.
Oh, it's no question. It's no question about it. And right now, our budget. Actually, if in fact you look at what is mandated, so first of all, debt service is a mandated expense. It has to be paid first. Second, charter school expenses actually are paid by the state. And if you put those two together, of our $2.3 billion budget, that is $1.1 billion. And so those are the things that are paid first. And so if, in fact, we continue to go down a path where many of our students are and families are selecting into schools, and we just willy-nilly add seats and are not able to manage that, then we will lose the ability to really have quality educational options in the district, in the schools remaining in the district.
But are you saying there should be greater oversight, or we should just the district should slow the process of charter school development?
Well, I think two things. Number one, we have to be able to plan for and predict what those expenses will be. And so that allows us to really look at when and how students will be moving and plan from a budgetary process along those lines. The current process allows, in some cases, charters to enroll, some charters, not all, some charters to enroll more than what we've agreed on, and that's what we base our budget on, and then go directly to the state and be reimbursed for those students, and those monies come out of our general operating fund. And so that was that's another reason for a different code suspension that also allows us to navigate through this fiscal situation. But the purpose with that is to have greater predictability and the ability to budget and manage what monies are actually being directed to charter schools.
Let me see what looks like John from Glenside has to say. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Dr. Hyde. Thank you, Marty, for having me on.
Sure, go ahead.
Dr. Hyde, I can understand that there's a terrible problem. You've inherited of historical mismanagement of the school district's budget, particularly in the last dozen years. I would like to know, first of all, whether you think that history of mismanagement warrants an independent federal level investigation of the management of the school district over the period of the SRC's so-called management of it, that is independent of the state and local level and independent of the Democratic and Republican parties. And my second question is, why is there no PFT representative on this program with Dr. Hyde, even though you've had other discussions on other themes?
Sure.
Where there have been both sides or multiple sides of questions there. I don't understand that today.
Well,
I appreciate your speaking from previous PFT
sure.
representatives of teachers being on and summarizing their positions, but I think a definite dialogue in situ would be much more telling for the audience as well as for clarifying a lot of the issues here. Specifically,
well, you know, John, let me take your call and I'll explain that. And we did have three teachers on the show last week. We obviously have Dr. Hyde this week. Jerry Jordan has been a guest on the show. We do 500 shows a year, so we're always open to having lots of different kinds of voices. And to be honest with you, sometimes it's more productive to have a solo guest, especially under these circumstances, and frankly, giving our listeners a chance to ask them questions directly. So that's an answer to your question. He's still raising questions about mismanagement, the SRC, an investigation into some of your predecessors or even some of the actions of the SRC.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I think is important is that, I can't focus on what has happened before I arrived. I'm only dealing with the circumstances and, as I indicated earlier, with fewer individuals, and we have enough challenges already just trying to manage through the situation. Could different things have been done? Oh, absolutely. Different things could have been done, especially when you're moving large numbers of students into small boutique high schools and not closing other schools. When you see a migration of students into different types of schools like charter schools, I would have loved to have had an experience where over the years the district was actually focusing on making sure the district was the right size. In addition, we are audited every year by the by the city comptroller, and those audits are made public, and those audits also produce a set of findings that guide our actions moving forward. This current SRC has also done an ethics analysis, and we are going to be creating a new structure, really, to make sure that the recommendations from that report are actually implemented. And in addition, we have a lot of federal audits already because we have large grants from the federal government, and those are independent to the state and to the local area. And those as well drive the actions of the district.
But and I think, at least from the public's perspective, all of a sudden there's a $300 million deficit. It does raise questions about who's watching the budget, who is responsible for the budget, who's making decisions so that it ends up in this kind of budget situation.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's really important is that that just didn't pop up. I mean, a year ago it was a $700 million deficit, and before that it was a significant deficit. And for many years, I understand that there have been deficits that have just been built into the budget, and therefore the district goes out and borrows money in order to make up that difference. And unfortunately now we pay almost 12% of our budget to pay back loans that were for those years where we borrowed against that deficit.
Let me get Dana from Chestnut Hill to join us on Radio Times. Dana, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me in, Dr. Height. Just to give you a little bit of my background here, I am one of the laid-off principals.
You're a laid-off principal?
Assistant principal.
Assistant, okay.
Yes. And I apologize. I have a terrible cold, so it may be a little difficult to understand me at times. And as much as I'd love to get my job back, and I appreciate you trying to suspend the seniority to get people back into the schools that they were in, I also understand why seniority is so important, and that, you know, maybe in my future career it would protect me, as I'm one of the low people on that seniority list. I'm one of the last people to get a job back. But I also was curious to know more about how safety in the schools is going to be dealt with. Having been an assistant principal, having worked both in the Philadelphia public schools, I've also worked in the South Bronx, New York, in the public schools there, I know how needy our students are. And there are so many things that need to be done to keep them safe. And it's not just having a bare number of staff. It's also about providing enough staff, even whether it's a small school or a large school, so that when a crisis occurs, when a student is threatening to commit suicide, when a student needs help for financial aid to get into college, when a student needs to know how to deal with the application process, because many of our students are first time going to college, right. How is that going to be possible with the bare bones staff, and if the level of school is not being taken into account when
let me take your point, only because we have so many callers, and I think what you're really referring to is that if you have one assistant principal for so many children or one counselor for so many children, they don't have a relationship, they don't know that child. And I think, William Height, that's a concern. If schools are short-staffed, will the children be shortchanged?
Yeah, and towards that end, we have also been working all summer long on partnerships, on establishing partnerships with city agencies and state agencies that provide services for many of the things that the caller just described. And so we have entered into some agreements with DHS, with the Department of Health, with the family courts, and beginning to really utilize and direct those services to schools. We've also heard from mental health, because they're also concerned about the lack of guidance counselors, where they will be detailing individuals to schools to assist with this. And so part of this is understanding the fiscal challenges that we have, but also using many of the established resources that are there that deliver similar types of services.
Dana, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Kim from South Philadelphia has to say. Kim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, yes, there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My question for Superintendent Height is, I'm wondering about how the decisions that we're making today How will they affect the next generation of teachers in Philadelphia, but larger in our country? And I'm just wondering, you know, what is the message that we're sending to young people today who are interested in careers in education? And do you think that those young people will be any more or less likely to consider a career in the public school system in Philadelphia as a result of our decision?
Kim, thanks for the call to Radio Times.
I think that's a great question. And one of the reasons we are, first and foremost, I think that individuals want to get into careers, and they want some stability. And they want some stability so that it's not a career that every year, if they continue to remain or if they choose to remain, the conditions change, and therefore, unbeknownst to them, they're already all of a sudden impacted. And so I think a couple of things. Number one, we have to become more stable as a school district. Every year, talking about cuts or eliminating programs or closing schools is not the way to really respond to what children need. And so there is a need for us to be sustainable long term, both in structure and revenue sources, which means that we have to look at the current structures and the cost of those structures and how we actually refocus and shift their funds in order to meet those things. To the caller's question, we're also beginning to shift our focus on things like length of service and even degree attainment, which we already know empirically have no value to, not no value, but no fundamental difference to what type of achievement it creates with students. And we're saying we should match the skills of teachers to the needs of students. And our ability to do that, we hope, will then attract and begin to attract more and very different types of individuals who are thinking about the educational profession.
Well, we could go on. Kim, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Dr. Height, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And our guest has been William Height, the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about this program, including a Facebook, Twitter, podcast, email, archives, Sirius Satellite Radio. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and thanks for those phone calls. Stay with us. We'll be right back.